A breezy run so far. Can't believe two of the 3 hours are down. Welcome to hour three of Sports Sunday here on The Fan. Yours truly, Steve Zabin. In today on this glorious, glorious final day of May, 2026. Metal Chris behind the board. Phone number is 800-636-1067. As the Spurs are through to the NBA Finals, it'll be a rematch of the 99 Finals, which the Spurs won. And it's a rematch of the NBA Cup Final from back in December. It's a really sharp-looking set of teams to watch. It's the nuclear-hot Knicks who have cooled off a bit sitting on the shelf. Can they reignite that? Against the deep and young San Antonio Spurs. With, of course, the star attraction, the 7-foot-4-inch alien, Victor Wembanyama, who was very emotional after the game. You could tell it meant so much to him. You know, he's not American. This just in. He's French. And so the culture for non-American-born NBA stars is just different. It was this way with Giannis when he won his title with the Bucks. And I'm not saying that they care more about it than NBA players who are stars from America. I think NBA American stars care very much as Europeans. It's just that the Europeans show it differently. Wembanyama talked about how much it would mean to him to win the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Funny how so few people, they may know the name, the Larry O'Brien Trophy. They may not know he was the former commissioner of the NBA well before David Stern took over and lifted the league out of a drug-addled and tape-delayed finals mess and turned it into a mainstream billion-dollar juggernaut on the pro sports landscape. But he talks about winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy and what it means and the struggle to get through. It was a tough series for Wemby. He had a dog game in game four, I want to say, where it looked like he wasn't up to the moment. For a period of games, they had effectively nerfed Wemby, forcing him to play further away from the basket, not want to get involved. They were fouling him a lot. It was frustrating. There's also apparently videos showing Wemby telling his subs at the end of games that are losses to go in and make some hard fouls, calling the code red to up the physicality against the Thunder. Take that for what it's worth. He also blew off a media session after game five, I want to say. So it's been up and down, but punching through and winning meant a lot to him. He was full body sobbing and heaving, and I love it. I'm here for it. As a sports fan, I want to see the guys care. And so he's a compelling story, no question about it. He's also a once every 50 years type of player. The skill set he has at 7'4", to both dribble in a way that you don't worry about him just committing turnovers left and right, to shoot with a smooth quality motion, made a big three in that fourth quarter barrage of threes that helped get him over, and to be so tall that when he dunks, he barely comes down off the rim. Like when he posterized poor Chet, it's like he didn't even land. It was like, oh, he's back on his tiptoes. Oh, that was easy. Just go right down the lane and bam! Of course, the new anti-tanking rules is going to make it impossible to do what the Spurs did, which was to draft in consecutive drafts, first, fourth, and second. Bing, bang, boom, to get their big three of Wemby, Castle, and Harper. So that's not going to happen. It seems like OKC has half the league's future first-round picks for the next 7 years. I don't know how that happened, but they did. They're both going to be a problem. This is why I said earlier in the show, and I'll now pay off this point that I threw out there, you know that LeBron is going back to the Cavaliers for one more year. You know that's going to happen. The Lakers do not want to pay him a huge amount of money. The Lakers just laid off a bunch of people in their front office, kind of like the Trailblazers did. And it makes you wonder, So are the Lakers hurting for cash? That franchise just sold for a record amount of money, and they're laying off staffers. They don't want to pay LeBron the kind of the one last year rocking chair tour type money if they don't have to. LeBron, meanwhile, does not want to be left alone without a dance partner at the end of his career. You know how LeBron is. He's not going to quietly go, well, looks like nobody wants me, so I guess I'm retired. Oh, no, he wants to go out on his terms, and he's going to make it happen. So what team fits the perfect bill? It's the Cavaliers. Not just from a basketball standpoint. They could use an extra piece, another guy, to give them a little something to get them further up the ladder. Also, maybe having Kenny Atkinson pull his head out of his you-know-what when it comes to coaching wouldn't hurt either. I'd get out of the Harden business, but they are, according to Wendy, getting back into the Harden business at a, quote, team-friendly rate, which will still be an astonishing probably $35, $40 million a year for a guy that is a proven non-winner in James Harden. And so LeBron back home one last time with feeling as maybe the guy that can take the Cavaliers to the finals. Take him to the finals. Just like he took many teams to the finals and did not win in the finals. Yes, he's got his share of rings, albeit one of them most recently with the Lakers in the bubble. That's a win for LeBron. Going home, being adored one last time, lifting the Cavaliers, hopefully out of a much weaker East Division, into the finals would be a huge win for him. Cleveland would pay a significant amount of money. You better keep a spot open for Bronny, by the way. And I can see that happening. I'm planting my flag on this. Mark that down. That's going to happen. What happens with Giannis and with AD and with OKC is going to be fascinating. But the Spurs are so young, so good, so deep. And it's also not just that they are hitting on their top picks. They're hitting in late round picks. So, yeah, they're really good. Fun to watch, too. Okay, let me transition here to this gambling story. Look, we know the industry, sports media, especially sports radio, is heavily in bed with big gambling platforms. And I'm a fan of responsible dabbling, if not light betting, on things, on sports, to make your life more fun. I always say, though, be smart about it. You shouldn't be playing parlays, which I know every ad that they have us read says, try this in-game parlay. Well, you don't have to. But parlays are they're a sucker bet. You should know that by now. But anyway, I'm a fan of gambling. I got no problem. I have my own gambling partner on my podcast. I won't mention it here. It's fine. I am not that guy. But we need to have a serious conversation about some of the younger men in society now, our young men who love sports, who now have phones and the apps to be able to bet on things. Because it's an epidemic. It is more than just a, hey, look at these teenagers. They're having fun. They're in college. What's the big deal? So they're throwing in a $5 parlay. Well, here's the big deal. Brendan Sorsby, who is an excellent quarterback at the collegiate level and was due to make a whole lot of money from Texas Tech this year, is almost certainly not going to play because of his gambling proclivities. They found out that he was betting on sports and betting on his own team, Indiana, even though he was not currently on the he was on the team, but he wasn't active. He wasn't on the active roster. And he said that, well, I bet on them out of a sense of solidarity. Okay. Soon as all this breaks, his agents and his people, his marketing, managing team, PR team, they're like, oh, we can't, we gotta do something. They put him into rehab for gambling. He recently came out of rehab for gambling. By the way, gambling rehab is a thing, okay? But he comes out of gambling rehab, and he's like, I feel great. I feel like for the first time in my life, I'm no longer controlled by gambling. And then another shoe drops. And then another shoe drops. There's more revelations coming out about Sorsby left and right, including now they found out that he was sending money to friends out of state to make bets for him because he knew that he himself betting on sports was gonna be a problem. Now, look, I understand being young, stupid, and not having a big life perspective, but man, are you kidding me? He is going to end up losing millions and his final chance to play college football and really improve his draft stock. He'll still get drafted, but it's not going to be where it would be if he was on a loaded Red Raiders team this year, slinging bullets, scoring touchdowns, making the co-eds get all squishy in the knees with their face paint at Texas Tech. That would have propelled him way up there into the upper echelon of picks, and that's probably not going to happen. Now, his lawyers are going to have something to say about it, make no mistake. They are lawyering as hard as their $800 an hour billing will allow them to lawyer, and they're going to fight this. But the initial ruling from the NCAA is, no, you are so banned. Not at all. This is not one we're going to go, oh, poor baby, you should have known better. They're trying to set a precedent, and it's one that probably needs to be set. It's a problem, man. I don't have boys. I got two beautiful daughters. They're 24 and 27, and they never gambled. They're never going to gamble. That's fine. But if I had teenage boys and they had an online account or an app, oh, I would be very, very concerned. I would want to make sure to be in there with them step for step to go, stop doing this. Stop betting these. What is this parlay? Dad, it's only $5. Yeah, but it's a 13-leg parlay. Yeah, but look at the payout. I'm like, next time you want to bet a parlay like that, son, just give me the $5. I'll back the parlay because it is not going to win. Quick break when we come back. Bryson DeChambeau is an interesting character in the world of sports. He is currently torn between, do I tuck my tail, apply to for reinstatement on the PGA Tour once my LIV Tour contract, as expected, expires and the league folds by the end of the season, or do I just become a YouTube golfer? We discussed this on my show, The Capital Golf Gang, and there's more Bryson news as well today, so we'll get into that. It's a Sports Sunday right here on The Fan. I hate the fact that every media-related story in sports now is depressing, but it's a changing landscape. Got to deal with the realities of things. Yahoo Sports has laid off several prominent NFL reporters, including one of their best, Charles Robinson. Is really, really good. Been working at Yahoo Sports, been a stalwart there for 20 years, spanning many different eras. Also, Charles McDonald announced that he had been laid off as well from Yahoo. As if that wasn't bad enough, SI.com, which, let's be honest, Sports Illustrated is already a shell of its former self, they had a bunch of layoffs, including some in their golf vertical, which had been profitable, and that includes Bob Herrig, who covers the PGA Tour, an excellent writer at that. I want to say, well, and someone will be lucky to pick them up, snap them up. Bigger and better things are coming. You know, it's easier said than done. People say that to you when you're out of a gig, right? Doesn't matter what you do, whether it's sports media or anything. Ah, you'll be better off. They pat you on the back. Go get them, kid. They're not with you for the 6-7 months of sending out resumes and interviews that go nowhere and dead ends, doubt about everything. But okay. That said, I don't at times understand where the money from the internet comes from, but I guess it just comes from eyeballs. If you get enough eyeballs, you can get the monies. You can leverage the eyeballs into straight cash, homie. Get a load of this. Barstool Sports has announced its second ever internet invitational golf tournament will have a field purse, a tournament purse, prize money of $4 million. That is quadruple their year one purse of $1 million, which was already kind of gobsmacking considering the fact that they just invited a bunch of YouTube golfers, internet golfers, social media golfers to come play a tournament and to film it. And a lot of people watched. I mean, kudos to Portnoy for figuring out this thing could make money. They've got more money this year. $4 million, by the way, is more than most DP World Tour events. And it matches opposite field PGA Tour events. And it is more than every event on the LPGA Tour. For Fat Perez and Bob Does Sports to play golf? I don't get it. To which I come to Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson DeChambeau is facing a decision. What do I do if the LIV Tour folds and if they don't sign me to a new contract, which it doesn't look like they're going to at this point? Obviously, he should go back and play the PGA Tour, but he's going to have to pay a penalty, financial penalty and everything else, and he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that wants to do that. So he recently told Kevin Van Valkenburg of the Fried Egg that he is stuck between content creation, meaning YouTube, and social media, and the PGA Tour. It was such a rich, wild statement that I had to say, you know what? I want to talk about this with my boys on the Capital Golf Gang. That'd be John Ronis, John Gould, and Chris Johnson. And we talked about this notion of, is he bluffing to try to get a better terms of reentry to the PGA Tour that I'm going to take my ball and go home? Or is he genuinely of an era and an age in which, yeah, being YouTube famous and being YouTube rich is in some ways better than actually trying to beat the Ricky Fowlers, Scottie Schefflers, and Rory McIlroys of the world? Here was our discussion on the Capital Golf Gang. You can find that podcast wherever you get your fine podcasts.
Kevin Van Valkenburg wrote a long piece where he listened and watched and pulled out some of the things of it. And he titled it, The Loneliness of Being Bryson DeChambeau. He's 32 years old. I want to read you a little section of graphs here. Quote, I'm in that weird space right now, he said. I don't know what to do. Either content creation or professional golf. I don't know what to do right now. I'm going to pause right there for you guys. Jeez. To jump in on
that. I think he should go for content creation. I don't want him in professional golf, but that's my bias.
Yeah, John's not a DeChambeau guy. I'm an
anti-DeChambeau.
Ronis, what do you make of that?
I feel sad.
How does that hit you?
I feel sad for him.
That he would even have that sentence in his mouth, his mind?
Yeah, because I think he's a very talented human being, and I think he's, to a degree, smart. And it makes me sad that he is torn between two logically stupid things, as far as one is a gift that's been given to him that he has nurtured his whole life, and that's the game of golf. So it tears me up that he even thinks that way. And there's definitely he's a lonely
person.
Or
thinks that they're equivalent choices.
Yeah. It just that makes me sad.
CJ, I know you've got to leave here shortly.
No, I'm good. I'm good for a little bit.
Tell me when you have to leave. Stop. No, I'll edit this out.
No, I'm good to go. On this though, like when I first read that Van Valkenburg piece, and I was like, you know, the first thing I could think of was DeChambeau, like 10 years old, on the range, you know, for 10, 12 hours, you know, a day. You know, his parents just dropped him off. And, you know, instead of, you know, thinking as he's like hitting a 20-foot putt and going like, this is for the U.S. Open Championship. If I make this, it goes in. He's thinking, if I make this putt, I'll get 22 million views on YouTube and make $2 million. That's and
on get, my monetization.
Yeah. And get 1,400 retweets.
And a bunch of new subscribers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that he's even being honest. I think, you know, when he's saying
it's a negotiating
like,
ploy.
Yeah. Or
That's a great question. I feel I'm sad.
Good starting point to fall on because I could go either way.
Yeah. I don't really trust that statement at all. There's no way if he is being truthful that he really is in that no man's land of trying to pick, you know, one or the other because, like, he believes that much into content creation versus becoming, you know, one of the greatest players in golf, his professional golf history, which he has the capability of, the skill level of being like that. No way. If he really is there, then this is one of the most interesting figures in sports history.
You know,
and he's and we're in the weirdest time in sports.
Well, we are in the weirdest time in sports. You know, 22 years ago, he would have been 10. So he's 32 now. 22 years ago is 10. Check my math on that, goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Carry the one.
Yeah.
You know when YouTube came out? So that would have been 2004.
Yeah. That's crazy.
YouTube came out in 2005.
Yeah.
He's a child of the YouTube generation.
Yeah.
So in that regard, he looks at it differently than you and I, Ronis. You and I believe that this ought to be a lead at them. You want to compete and inspire people and to develop professional rivalry and friendships on the highest level, the PGA Tour, to lead the most fulfilling, meaningful golf existence.
Yeah.
I just think that there's a 0.00001 that have his talent in golf. And there's a larger number of that that have his talent in YouTube.
Yep. And I would say, too, before, you know, I've said a lot of things about Bryson, and I don't like him, and I think he's disingenuous in many ways, but I do think he's smart, and I do think this was part of his negotiation ploy for the PGA Tour to say, hey, if you want me, I come back with no penalty.
Okay. Ha!
That exactly what John Gould just said there would be the way that Trump would
negotiates. Trump starts by saying, here's an outrageous proposition.
Yeah.
And then he'll climb down slowly off of the outrageous opening gambit.
And also that money is paramount, too. And that's what, you know, where Bryson's gone. He took the live deal. He's making all the money in YouTube, whatever, as opposed to, you know, forget about winning the CJ Cup or that doesn't matter to me, you know, on that. I can make as much cash as possible. But I think the other thing that where John Rona's point on there about you don't have to be the skill level of Bryson DeChambeau to be a star on YouTube, Instagram, golf.
Yep.
You know, you can be a 16 handicap that's got big personality and make more money than DeChambeau. So he's not the champion of social media golf on there. Yeah, I mean,
so anyway, that was our conversation. It's a interesting concept. I don't know. I don't really know what to believe about DeChambeau, whether or not he is bluffing or whether or not he really believes this. He just seems to be cut from a different cloth. So we shall see. Coming up, we're around on the corner here. I still have some stuff on my list I want to talk about, including a Cinderella story in baseball that I had to read twice to go, wait a minute. You're telling me this team was 4-23 and now they're on the verge of the College World Series? Yes, that's a story. Plus, the Montreal Canadiens were absolutely dump trucked out of the Stanley Cup playoffs by Carolina. Stanley Cup final is set. Vegas, Carolina. It'd be a great series if you want to go back and forth and bring your golf clubs if you're lucky enough to be on that series. Carolina is favored -155, but the poor fans of the Montreal Canadiens have been waiting a long time, and they're going to have to keep on waiting for a drought that has gone on far too long. Quick break. We're back with more. It's Sports Sunday right here on The Fan. Baseball is a funny, funny game. You just never quite know what could happen. What is on the verge of happening is truly unprecedented, as the NCAA Division I college baseball tournament is coming into focus here, as they're playing the final of the regional round games to determine who goes to Omaha. Omaha for the World Series. And in the regional final today is one UW-Milwaukee from the Horizon League. What? They beat Auburn on Friday. Auburn of the SEC, where they actually spend money on their baseball teams. UW-Milwaukee, small school, Horizon League, not a power in college baseball. Their field is still covered in snow for the start of the season in March usually. They started this year, I'm not kidding, 4-23. They're now 26-31 since things have warmed up just a bit and the team has come around, but they're 26-31 and they have a chance to make history. It was only the second NCAA tournament victory in program history and the first since 1999. The Panthers will take on the winner of the rain-suspended North Carolina State-Central Florida matchup, which I think Central Florida won. I'm reading this from yesterday's copy. But, yeah, I mean, that's just wild right there. And here's what else is wild. The Big Ten does play baseball, but there's only one school that doesn't have a Big Ten baseball team, and that is Wisconsin. Believe it or not, I have no idea why, but it is. UW Milwaukee has a team, and they started 4-23. Now they're on the verge of making the College World Series. Yep, we're down to it, people. The College World Series is on the radar because it is going to be June tomorrow. Stanley Cup Final begins Tuesday, ABC, 8 p.m., Vegas, Carolina. Like I said, Carolina favored -155, Vegas +125, bet responsibly as always. NBA Finals begin Wednesday on ABC as well, 8:30 p.m. tip time. Give it a little bit more than that because you know they go late. New York at San Antonio, game one. The Spurs are significant favorites, not overwhelming, but significant, -205. The Knicks are +170. Should be a fun one. I'm looking forward to it. NBC bowed out yesterday after their run of covering the NBA for the first time since the early 2000s. I think the early 2000s was when they bowed out. Mike Tirico, Reggie Miller, as well as I'm blanking on the third guy in their booth, but the overall broadcast was good. I'm a Tirico, not just fan, I'm a Tirico stan. I think Mike Tirico is fantastic. I think he's figuring out his legs for basketball. And by legs, I mean he's figuring out his voice. He's figuring out just how to do things. Tirico doing football games is so great at narrative and other stuff beyond just the play-by-play. He's great at the play-by-play, down a distance, yards, etc. But he's good at the narrative and the weaving together of, okay, here's a storyline and here's how it's playing out right in front of our eyes while I'm calling 2nd and 5, handoff left side to so-and-so. I think in the NBA it's too fast-paced, and especially the way today's tempo of the NBA game is, I found myself thinking, Mike, I know you got narrative you want to inject into your broadcast, but you got to stay a little bit more on point because there'd be big plays happening and he would miss them because he's just trying to get in one of his points. Now, he's super prepared, as all these guys are, but especially so for Tirico. And so it was a little bit uneven, but it's still great. It's great to have Tirico. It gave it a big game vibe. Nothing against Mike Breen, who takes over from here. Breen is outstanding. That whole booth, though, is not what it once was. Back when they had Van Gundy and Jackson, that was the holy triumvirate, which I loved so much. I still don't know why they broke that up, but whatever. But NBC did a pretty good job. I like Reggie Miller a lot, even though he can talk sort of both ways on the flopping issue with SGA. He's good because he'll cut through and sometimes just say, look, this is not the way it should be, or this guy's at fault, or this was a great play and here's why. Jamal Crawford is the third guy I knew would come to me. Crawford seems a little bit lost in his role, a little bit searching for where he fits in. And for some reason, my ears have not attuned to the pitch of his voice, so he doesn't pop for me as much as some of the other guys. But welcome back, NBC. Welcome back, Roundball Rock. Thanks a lot, Michael Jordan, for the $5 million NBC paid you to be a contributor. You contributed one interview, one heavily edited interview that aired back in October. Since then, where's Mike? Oh, he's golfing. Somehow he was smart enough to structure his deal to which they didn't stipulate. Well, you have to do 4 sit-downs. You have to do 3 pre-games. I want you to do at least one or two posts. No. Jordan's like, I'll be a contributor. How much? Oh, you will? All right, here's $5 million. All right, cool. Can we do an interview? Yeah, one. Anything more? No, that's it. In a way, I kind of respect it, even though NBC got ripped off.
Like, how much for one rib?
Right, exactly. Everyone the whole season, Metal Chris, was like, when are we going to hear from Jordan again? I'd love to know Jordan's thoughts on this. What do you think Jordan thinks about the flopping at SG? He's not talking. He's done with his contributions to the National Broadcast Corporation, NBC. Quick break. Final segment here on a glorious Sunday in the nation's capital. On The Fan, I am Steve Zabin. No matter what Alex Caruso says, yeah, the Thunder have a Spurs problem. Here's what he was said after the final yesterday, 111-103 to San Antonio, as the champs are out, and the champs are down, and the champs are now figuring out what to do next. Here was Caruso in the locker room.
Does it feel like this is like the Spurs are a problem that you guys will have to solve, just based on their age and their roster makeup?
I mean, there's nothing that needs to be solved. We could have won the game tonight, and we would have been asking them maybe the same thing. Like, I don't think there's this huge narrative of, like, this is a bugaboo. Like, we should have played better and won the game and been in the NBA Finals. They're a good team. They're young. We're a good team. We're young. Both will probably be around for a while. So, you know, we got to get better and try and win next time.
All right. That's a fair answer coming from an athlete's point of view. But they are a problem. Like, let's just call a spade a spade. Here's the final numbers on OKC's title defense from Sean Grandy. 4-8 against the Spurs, 71-14 against everyone else. Yeah, they got a Spurs problem. 4-8 against the Spurs, 71-14 against everybody else. In fact, 36% of their losses, 8 of 22, were to San Antonio. But he's not wrong in saying that, well, if we had just won the game, if basically San Antonio didn't go nuclear from outside in the fourth quarter, then we would have won the game. And guess what? You'd be asking them these narratives of, are you ever going to get past OKC? Are they too good for, like, stuff like that. Evan Sidery tweets, the Thunder currently own 14 first-round picks through 2033. After tonight's Game 7 loss, it might be time for Sam Presti to finally push the war chest of assets in for a game-changer. Pairing Giannis with SGA might be what's necessary against Wembanyama. Well, that's the easiest... I mean, that's the best option on the table. I think it'd be unfair to pair those two together, at least for the immediate term, the next 2 or 3 years, assuming Giannis stays healthy. But it would be perfectly legal. And if you're the Bucks, you want to get his most draft picks in return. And who has the draft picks? Sam Presti. There's also an apron problem with the Thunder. I know this is exciting stuff. First apron, second apron. Sam Quinn, CBS, says the Thunder cap stuff is more straightforward than the Doomers are making it out to be. They're $39 million over the second apron. Dort, team option, Wiggins, and Joe, all tradable into mid-level exceptions, combined to make $38 million. Pretty simple to solve with a Hartenstein renegotiation. Yeah, I would concur that a lot of the salary cap stuff that we obsess about in the media... A, we don't know how to work a spreadsheet like those actually running team salary caps do. But B, they're usually two or three steps ahead of us. And we don't, as media members or fans, don't even see, like, okay. I didn't know you're going to do that. Either way, they're going to figure it out. And if they're over the second apron and they start getting hammered by the tax, guess what? They're just going to pay it. Then there's this, non-sports related. Imagine, Metal Chris, you're on a nice leisurely flight from Newark to Palma de Mallorca, Spain. Probably on holiday. An hour into the flight over the Atlantic Ocean, the captain says,
Captain speaking. No, we're going to have to turn around and land. Apparently there's a bomb threat on the plane.
What? It turns out that a 16-year-old boy on the flight, I guess for laughs, renamed one of his Bluetooth devices, probably from Beats Studio headphones. He renamed it in his device to Bomb. I'm thinking of the movie Meet the Fockers. So Meet the Fockers or Meet the Parents, the first one where he's like bomb ba bomb 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 bomb. Why can't I think of the actor's name? He'll be courtside at Knicks games. It's not Adam Sandler.
It's Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller, yeah. Ben Stiller. Bomb 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 bomb. Some 16-year-old dipstick said, oh, it'd be funny, watch this. So what happened was other people logging on to their Bluetooth saw other available Bluetooth devices, and one of them said bomb. And they told the captain, and they told the flight attendants. And after the captain said, we need everyone to turn off their Bluetooth devices, everyone turned them off except for the one that said bomb. So they did a U-turn over the Atlantic and went back to Newark. At least they weren't halfway. What should happen to that kid?
Here's the thing. It's stupid that he did something like that, but it's also stupid that we live in a world where you can do something like that and it causes this kind of a problem.
Agreed.
Like, if you were going to actually make a bomb and put it on a plane, you wouldn't put a big sign on it that says bomb.
No.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
no. You would put a name on it such as puppy pictures. Something innocent.
Yeah, exactly. Something to make it innocuous, right? You don't, I don't know. It's
yeah. Or something that makes it look like it's part of the airplane system. Like United In-Flight Entertainment. Oh, don't mess with that.
Why would a bomb have Bluetooth anyway? I don't know.
That's another one. Well, so you can detonate it remotely, but you're on the plane.
Bluetooth on them. I don't think that's a device compatibility thing they've done yet.
Look, I'm not into bomb making. I didn't think I'd have to say this, but I'd imagine you could, right? If you knew how to work it.
I suppose.
Bluetooth trigger.
Whatever.
But here's the thing.
You can hack anything, I guess. But
all right, here's the thing. If you were literally halfway over, wouldn't you rather just keep going? Like, if there's a bomb on the plane, if somebody's going to blow it up, they're going to do what they're going to do. Like, the captain could say we're returning back to Newark, and the guy with the bomb who named it bomb on his Bluetooth device is going to realize, oh no, they saw my Bluetooth bomb. I better press the kaboom button right now. They're going to do what they're going, like, they're going back.
Yeah, announcing it probably wasn't the best idea.
The going back doesn't do anything. And you know what? I don't want to know anything about any of this. So what should happen to the kid? That's a good question. On the one hand, you inconvenienced a lot of people, scared the bleep out of a lot of people. On the other hand, you're a 16-year-old kid. You're too stupid to know how too stupid you are. We got one more little segment, then Nats Baseball next. Hey, I'm still here for one more segment. I know it's past 1 o'clock. We're going up until 1:05 and the start of Nats Baseball right here on your flagship home of the Washington Nationals. It's odd for me because I always treat the top of each hour as we're coming out is what we're doing this hour. Here's what we're going to talk about. And when you only have 5 minutes and you're running into a baseball game, you feel like, well, I don't have time to unpack all this. I don't have time to talk about that. So what do I do in what is not a rump segment? I call end of hour short segments rump segments. It's just the rump end of the hour. What do I do, Metal Chris, with the opening segment? The big opening number, for 5 whole minutes leading into Nats baseball.
I don't know. We can talk about our favorite metal songs for baseball players to walk out to.
We can talk about that. Why don't we talk about one of my go-to favorites, Replay. If you don't know by now, I'll say it again. Death to Replay! I hate all instant replay. It is a blight on the sports that I love. More people are coming to my side on this. Getting it right is overrated. It's overrated because these are just games. Nobody lives. Nobody dies. Nobody goes to prison. Nobody gets set free based on the outcome of a game. And don't say, well, there's a lot of money gambling on these games. Don't you want to go? Yeah, well, you win some, you lose some gambling. Shouldn't be gambling that much money anyway. That's a poor excuse to say we've got to get every call right. And as I often say, replay gets still way too many things wrong to even be worth all the trouble, to be worth all the delay, to be worth having to sit and wonder, will this exciting play, this home run, touchdown, double play, you name it, offsides, onsides, goals scored, will this stand upon replay? Hell, there was replay a couple times in the NBA Western Finals here that even the announcers were like, whoa, I can't believe that. In fact, in the first period of Carolina and Montreal, there was what I thought was a cut and dried, clear as day, goalie interference that should have wiped out the first goal by Carolina. Not only did I think that, the announcers thought that as well. Well, they came back and they said, upon further review, no goalie interference. And there was no explanation. There was like, how? One of the Carolina players just crashed right into the goalie's leg without even being touched. I don't get it. So replay gets a lot of things wrong. And sometimes it gets a ton of things wrong. It gets it very, very wrong. This instance last night, in Sacramento, California, home of the Athletics for one more year. The ABS system appeared to hit a rare glitch during the Athletics game against the Yankees on Saturday night. Pitch to A's left fielder Tyler Soderstrom in the fourth inning was confirmed as a strike, even though the replay showed it missed the zone by a little less than an inch. The call came in the fourth inning of a 6-4 win by the Athletics when Ryan Weathers threw a 2-0 pitch that was called a strike. Soderstrom immediately challenged the call because he thought the pitch was low. After a short delay, plate umpire Adam Beck announced the pitch was confirmed as a strike and the A's lost their challenge, but the replay on MLB.com showed the pitch was almost an inch low and should have been called a ball. Again, death to replay. Way overrated. Okay, Nats baseball is next, people. Metal Chris, great job today. Thank you. Enjoy the day, and we will see you next time.